That's what this series is all about. We have to share our messes with one another, because if you think you're a mess, well, you're not alone. And I was thinking to myself, as I was sitting there, it didn't dawn on me Thursday, but it just dawned on me. Kurt's, you know, out of town. My name is Julie Butchton-Kirk, by the way. I'm a part of the teaching team here at Cross Point. And he's like, oh, we're starting a new series, Me and My Hot Mess. I think you should start it. It just kind of hit me. I'm like, oh, I wonder if there was a reason for this. I don't know. But it's all right. I'll take it. You're going to find out. You're going to find out. I'm a mess. In fact, 4 years ago, I was sitting in my car, and I was crying, and I was in the parking lot at the Hamilton Southeastern School District building, like the headquarter building on Cumberland Road. And I was in my car crying. I had just missed turning in these really important forms that were going to affect my son's entire high school experience. This was a really big deal. Our neighborhood 4 years ago, well, Evan actually just graduated last weekend. And so 4 years ago, as he was getting ready to start high school, our neighborhood was zoned in such a way that it was like that weird pocket. Like, my kids went to Fishers Junior High, and instead of going like from Fishers Junior High to Fishers High School, we went from Fishers Junior High to HSE High School. And so my son, all of his friends, by the way, I am so sorry. I'm just going to tell you right now, I have had copious amounts of coffee and Benadryl. I'm just thinking it's not going to be a good mixture. So we'll see what happens. But anyway, so my son wanted to go to Fishers, of course. That's where all of his friends were. And the only way to do this 4 years ago was you entered a lottery. And what they did was, depending on how many spaces would be available, they would randomly pick names, and then you could switch high schools. Okay, so these are what those said forms were. This was so he could get into the lottery so that he could go to Fishers High School instead of HSE. I got there early. It was still dark outside, 7 a.m. I walk in the door. It's like me and the lady behind the counter. That is it. I hand her the forms. She takes a look at him and she says, yeah, I can't take these. And I was like, why? She's like, oh, these were due yesterday. My heart, I mean, it started beating. I started sweating. I was just like, wait, what? And she's like, yeah, these were due Thursday at 5 o'clock. Okay, it is Friday morning at 7 a.m. It has been, these forms could have been here sleeping. Right? They could have been here. And so I said, ma'am, can you just please take these forms? I mean, you literally just opened the doors. You know, no, I can't do that. So I start telling her, I'm like, my son is going to be devastated. I'm like, this is high school. This is a really big deal. I'm like, are you sure you can't take the forms? Nope, I can't take the forms. So I said to her finally, I said, my one last plea was, I said, okay, can you take the forms? Don't put them in the lottery because that's not fair. I said, but can you at least just take the forms? Put them in the file with the lottery, you know, just in case. And she was like, nope, I can't do that. So I leave, I go to my car, I'm crying, I'm feeling like the worst mom ever. Evan gets home from school that day. Mom, did you turn in the forms for the lottery? Yes. I sure did. Turned them in. A week goes by, we don't hear anything, and I'm like, this is fine, this is good, I'm in the clear, you know. A couple weeks go by. Evan says, Mom, did we get our letter yet? And I said, for what? And he's like, you know, for the lottery. And I said, no, honey, we didn't get a letter. And he's like, well, everybody I know, you know, that submitted their name for the lottery got a letter. And I said, well, I guess we didn't get picked. And he said, no, Mom, in the letter, it said that everyone who put their name in for the lottery this year got to go, right? Because there were enough spots. And I was just like, well, first of all, it was not my best parenting moment, okay? I'm just going to be honest with you. And hot mess, big time hot mess right in that moment. I just had some decisions to make, and I was really upset, and I know you know the expression hot mess. I mean, we use it all the time now, which is interesting because it originally, the term did not mean a person. Originally, it's a military term. Years and years ago, it referred to food. So it was like, you know, your food was in the mess hall or it was in a mess kit. It was a hot mess. And which could still be, we could still use that term in my house. You know, it's like dinner's ready, go get your hot mess. It was also a military term in which if soldiers got into a dangerous situation, they would say, oh, you know, they're in a hot mess. And so now, you know, words evolve and change. And so now we use it basically to refer to a person. And here's how the Urban Dictionary states it. It says it's a term used to describe somebody that has no reason to look the way that they are looking at the time. Right? So basically, your life could be falling apart. You know, everything's a mess, but you are looking good. You look like you're holding it together. And this, I know, describes me. It describes Brad. It describes any one of us. It describes everybody I know. And it describes guys, too, okay? So if you saw the new series, Hot Mess, and you thought, oh, this is for the ladies, I can just check out, no. Men, you are a hot mess as well. And I know this because, this is how I know this, because this is what we all do, okay? Despite what is going on at home, despite what might be happening at work, or what the checkbook might be saying to you, what do? We show up, we smile, we look good, we give the impression that, you know, everything's going good, life is well. And that's really one of the reasons, if you talk to people, that a lot of people don't like coming to church. You know, because they walk in and it's like everybody looks like they have their act together. Everybody looks super spiritual. Like you think to yourself, nobody in here is going through what I'm going through right now. If they only knew what a hot mess I was. Well, rest assured, okay? I'm just letting you know right now that you are surrounded, okay, row after row after row, you are surrounded by a bunch of hot messes this morning. We just clean up good. Right? We don't flaunt our messes. We tend to cope, and that's really the nature of a hot mess. And that's what we're going to be going after these next few weeks, because there is something really powerful about our messes. Our messes can change our lives for the better. And you might be thinking, well, how is that possible? I don't see how this could even happen. But there's a powerful connection between your mess and your relationship with God. And so each week, we are going to dive into that. If you can't come Thursdays for the food trucks, you know, come Sundays, and then there's also the podcast, so you can be listening to those so you can track. Because the mess is something that's super interesting to me, because it is the one thing that we all have in common. Everybody, everywhere, doesn't matter. If you're a Jesus follower, you're agnostic, doesn't matter, young, married, old, single, American, Italian, living across the globe, it doesn't matter. For everybody, life is messy. It is the one thing that we all have in common. And you could take your pick, right? I mean, at any given time, you are either a hot mess or you might just be in between a mess, and then you'll be a hot mess again. Because we've got financial hot messes. Let's see, maybe you've lost your job. You made some bad business decisions. You've gotten yourself into debt. We could have health messes. You know, you got a diagnosis, and now you have to, you know, live life a little differently than you did before. We have academic messes. It's the end of the year. Maybe your GPA suffered, and you got to do some classes over, you know? What about family and relationship messes? That's like enough said. I mean, there's enough in that arena for everybody to go around, right? In-laws, parent, child, I mean, coworker situation, dating relationships. I mean, there is a lot in that. So everything is messy. There is a little bit of good news in that, okay? And that is that usually there is somebody's life who's a little bit messier than yours. So you could take a little bit of comfort in that. Okay, that's not really the good news. The good news, I mean, we do that. But the good news is that you're not alone. You are not alone. It is not just your home life. It is not just your marriage. It is not just your GPA or your job. The mess is our common ground. You have this in common with people you don't even like. People who believe completely differently than you. The mess is the one thing we all have. And we have to remember that, okay, as we go into this series. I want you to really remember that it's our common ground. Because here's what we do as people. We have this tendency to look at other people, right, and look at their messes or what might be going on in their life. And we have a tendency to kind of criticize and assess other people. Now, we might not say these things to their face, but we are thinking these things in our head, okay? That was really stupid. Why in the world did they do that? Well, that was dumb. You know, didn't they see that coming? Well, I'll tell you what, I saw that way they were living their life and making some of their decisions, and you know what? It's really all their fault. I mean, let's be honest. Who has not criticized or compared somebody else's mess at some point in life? There is a lot of fog, but I don't see one hand. And this is, you guys are lying. If you do not have your hand raised, you're lying. And if you didn't learn from my story early on, lying can be very dangerous. It can be very messy. So heads up. I know we all look at other people. So here's the two big ideas as we launch this series. Okay, these two are going to be like foundational as we go through. One is that when it comes to messes, we should be students, not critics. Students, not critics. Now, when Evan... when he heard that I had lied and I didn't turn the form in, he was very upset and angry, and he had every right to be. But his first response initially was, it was somehow my fault. You know, I forgot, which, believe me, totally could have happened on any given day, because I forget a lot. So I think he thought, well, Mom overslept, or she forgot, or she went to the wrong place, whatever the case was. But then as I began to say, hey, hold on, as I began to tell him the backstory, hey, I was there before it opened, I cried, I was so upset, I begged, I pleaded. You know, you told me that it was 5:00 on Friday. I mean, that's what we both thought the deadline was. So I was going by, you know, we must have been both misinformed. As he began to know some of the details behind the mess of the forms, he had a little bit more understanding. And that's usually how it is for us. Initially, we look at someone's mess, we might criticize and assess it. But then what happens when we get the details? If you're privy to that, right? When you find out where they came from, why they did what they did, why they had to make that decision, how they made that decision, all of a sudden we move from being critical and we have a little bit more compassion. So as we go through this mess, focus on your own mess, okay? Let's be students, not critics. And Crosspoint does that so well. I mean, that's one of the things that Eric and I love about Crosspoint, is that we strive to be a place where you can come, you can hear about God, how much he loves you, hear about Jesus Christ, and you can walk in as a hot mess and not have your act together, and guess what? It is okay, because there's not one person here that's got their act together, and we never will. That's just the nature of life. In fact, we could now be Crosspoint, home of the hot mess. It could be like a new slogan. People could think it's a sandwich. They might come on Thursdays thinking the hot mess is a sandwich. So I'll see what I can do about that. I'm going to run this all past Kurt when he comes back. The second thing, though, that we're going to need to remember when it comes to messes is that if you can see your mess, you can see God. Here's that power part that I was talking about. See, your mess and my mess are what brought God near to us. You know, most of us are familiar with John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he sent his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. And that's because of our mess. That whole thing happened because of the mess. God looked down at the messy world, and he saw the messy people, and he thought, I got to do something. So he sent his son Jesus to walk down physically into our mess, walk around in it, wait around in it, and do something for us that we could just never, ever do on our own, because we always fall short. And that is to pull us up and out of our mess, to provide a solution for our sin and our shortcomings. So if you can see your mess, and if you can acknowledge that you can't fix it, you are just this close to seeing God. The Apostle Paul introduces and explains this idea when he's writing a letter to the early Christians in Rome. And so we're going to take a look at Romans chapter 3, verses 19 to 23. So follow along. It's a little long, and I don't have the bouncing ball, but I think you guys can do it. It says, obviously, the law applies to those to whom it was given, for its purpose is to keep people from having excuses and to show that the entire world is guilty before God. For no one can ever be made right with God by doing what the law commands. The law simply shows us how sinful we are. But now God has shown us a way to be made right with him without keeping the requirements of the law, as was promised in the writings of Moses and the prophets long ago. We are made right with God by placing our faith in Jesus Christ, and this is true for everyone who believes, no matter who you are. For everyone has sinned. We all fall short of God's glorious standard. Paul points out in this passage, he's basically saying, hey, it's our inability to keep God's law. That's the very thing that enables us to see God's presence. It's the fact that we know we mess up from time to time. That serves as the vehicle, as a window to which we can discover God and what he's done for us. Because he's like, it doesn't matter what law you've chosen to follow. It doesn't matter what law you've put yourself under. You will mess up. So when he was writing this, there were Jewish believers that were still trying to do the Mosaic law, the Old Testament laws. And Paul's like, hey, listen, we've been doing that for 100 years, failing miserably. We know that's not going to work. And this is why Jesus came. And so he's like, now, if you're a Jesus follower and you believe in the resurrected Lord and we're going to now go after that with all we've got, guess what? We're still going to fall short now and then. And if you're a Buddhist, you're going to fall short. You'll get a chance to come back and do it again, but you're going to fall short. So it doesn't matter what law you have chosen to follow or put yourself under. And this isn't even really about religion. You know, I mean, we can open this up and make this broad. You know, atheists and agnostics, people who don't believe in a God. Because every single person has this thing that God wove into the fabric of humanity, and it's called the law of conscience. And so even if you don't believe in God or place your faith in a higher being, you still hold yourself accountable to something. And usually that's themselves or their own standard of living and what they think people should do. Because you and I just intuitively know. There is something within us. There are basic laws of humanity that we know are the right things to do. You know, be kind, work hard, be fair, don't kill, don't steal. We know this, that hey, if we were to function in this way, if humanity was to function in this way, how awesome and great the world would be. And yet, we can't even do that correctly. And so when you realize that you can't even stay true to your own standards, much less God's, something incredibly powerful happens. It's pivotal, but it's so subtle. And so I don't want you to miss this, okay? When you can acknowledge that you're not perfect, you're in essence saying there's a perfect. That there is something, there is some law, some standard, some morality, some ethics. It's out there and I'm falling short and I don't know what it is and I don't even know what to call it, but it exists and I fall short. I went to that website again. I stole from the company. I lost my temper. I'm still not spending enough quality time with my family. My priorities are out of balance. I just ate the entire container of mint chocolate chip. Sometimes we fall short of just our own expectations for ourselves. We do a thing called Faith versus Doubt Night at Crosspoint. We've had a few times. And if you haven't come, and if we do it again, you have to come. It's a really cool night. It's two friends. One's a believer and one's an atheist. And essentially what they do is they kind of duke it out up here on stage with words. They each kind of explain what they believe, why they believe it. They kind of go at each other a little bit. Well, why do you believe that? And then they defend it. And my favorite part is at the end, they open it up and they have like a Q&A time. And at this last event, somebody had posed a question to the atheist and they said, okay, if you don't believe in God, where do you get your hope? And then how do you live, decide how to live? Meaning, if you don't believe in God or accountability to anything, then why not just go wild? Like, just do whatever it is that you want to do. And his answer was interesting because he said, well, because I don't believe in a God, he believes that this is it. You have one life to live, and then it's lights out, nothing, blackness. He said that's his motivation for doing the right thing and for being kind and, you know, living well and doing the right things. And that's a great answer. You know, that's what he believes, and in some ways that makes sense. But it still doesn't answer the question of where that internal compass came from. I mean, you feel that way, and so this is how you're going to decide to live, but where did that come from? In fact, C.S. Lewis, if you're familiar with him, he was a non-believer, and this was actually one of the main concepts that drove him to really seek and find God, because he said, every human has this. Where did this come from? Even if you're not a believer, why is it there? You know, this thing that is deep down inside us that just drives us towards better living and the right choices, towards the shoulds and away from the should nots. How did that get there? Who put it there? Why is it there? We're going to take a look at verse 20 again. It says, for no one can ever be made right with God by doing what the law commands. The law simply shows us how sinful we are. I don't even like reading that. You guys probably don't even like hearing that. I mean, it just sounds so brutal, doesn't it? It's when you first read it, you're like, ha, 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 condemnation. You know, it doesn't necessarily sound very good. I mean, I've been a believer for over 30 years, and I'm going to tell you, every now and then that pride bristles back up, and it's like, oh, yeah, oh, I'm a sinner. Because I really negotiated with God for quite a long time before I bowed my knee to him, because I kept telling him I was a good person. But here's the point of the struggle, okay? The point of that sense of guilt or tension that you feel, it isn't so that you'll try harder. Oh, I gotta be better. I gotta do this. I gotta somehow make this right and start over again. God speaks to you through your conscience so that you'll become aware that there is something, someone outside of yourself to whom you are accountable. That tension, that guilt, that sense of that you feel at times, that's a really good thing, because you're feeling that for the exact reason that God gave it to you and gave it to us and wove it into our heart to know him and to have his law written on our hearts, and that is to make us aware of his presence so that we would get to the end of ourselves and say, I can't do this on my own. I can't even measure up to my own standards. It's a reminder of our need for him. God doesn't do it to condemn. He doesn't do it to drive the knife in deeper and say, oh, you know what? I knew you were going to mess up. You're just lousy. You're never going to get this right. Here comes lightning, thunderbolts, judgment. He does it to say, you know what? You can't do it. But guess what? I can. And if you'll, I'm over here, and I've got the solution for you. It's in verse 21. It says, but now God has shown us a way to be made right with him without keeping the requirements of the law. Did you guys get that? To be made right with Christ without having to keep the requirements of the law, because we can't, as was promised in the writings of Moses and the prophets long ago. We are made right with God by placing our faith in Jesus Christ, and this is true for everyone who believes, no matter who you are. It just seems so simple, but our pride gets in the way. But if you can see your mess, if you get to a place in your life where you can see your mess, you are so close to seeing God. Because God knew that we would never get this right 100% of the time, right? He knew that, you know? I mean, you can be good. Good isn't good enough, because you can be good 95% of the time, but you still have 5% mess quota over here happening. What are we going to do about that? I mean, that still needs to be looked at and dealt with. You know, then you have somebody else that says, well, I'm good 80% of the time, so I've got like 20% of, you know, not being so great and being pretty messy. And then the person that says, well, I only have 5% that needs coverage. And 20% is like, yeah, I have 20%. Well, who gets to decide what that percentage is then? Who makes that decision? And God does. And he says, it's 100%. And so I've got it. I've got the slack for you. So when you put your faith and your trust in Jesus Christ, he forgives you of your current mess, all your future messes. It's like insurance for your soul, which is exactly what insurance does, right? I mean, you get insurance because you want it to help you with your messes. And I'm a huge fan. I hate commercials, but I'm such a weirdo, a geek. I love the insurance commercials, okay? And so I want to show you just, these are like two of my favorite.
I'm a raccoon, and this time in your attic has been the best week of my raccoon life. I'm digging, I'm nesting in this fluffy stuff. I've already had like 4 babies. I'm the smartest raccoon I know.
And if you got your home insurance where you got your cut-rate car insurance, you could be paying for this yourself. So get Allstate. You could save money and be better protected from mayhem, like me.
At Farmers, we've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything, even mermuts. And we covered it, February 3rd, 2016. Talk to Farmers. We know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two.
I totally wish I was on set when they were doing that dog one. That's like my all-time favorite. That's just the best. It is. It's so darn cute. But insurance helps us out of our messes. And so as we wrap up this morning, I'm going to use something from the Farmers commercial to be a challenge for you. It's actually on your card, on your connection card. It's on the back as one of the next steps, which we do every week. And, you know, if you don't take advantage of the next steps, if you want to grow, use the next steps. That's all I'll say. So take a look at those. But one of them, okay, is, you know, the Farmers commercials, how they always end with, we know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two. Okay? Well, one of the things that we needed to remember for this series going forward is to be students, not critics. So when you look at somebody else's mess, okay, if you find yourself tempted this next week or the coming weeks to look at somebody else and think, well, I'm not as bad as, or, you know, their mess looks, you know, worse than mine, then repeat this to yourself. It says, I know a mess or two because I've been a mess or two. All right, I know a mess or two because I've been a mess or two. And if that's not your thing, you're like, I'm not that weirdo that says those things out loud in my car to myself, then maybe your next step is to come back next week. Maybe your next step is to look at your current mess this week and just consider that that's an opportunity. God wants to draw near to you. He does not want to cast you aside. So maybe this week you look at the messes and then you'll see God. If you can stand, I'm going to close in prayer for us, because this is, you know, this isn't easy stuff to do. That's for sure. Our pride gets in the way. Heavenly Father, we are all messes. And as much as we hate to admit it, we need you. And our pride can get in the way. We can continue to tell ourselves that good is good enough. But Lord, there is a law, there is a standard, and it's you. But God, in your graciousness and in your love, you said, this is my standard, but I know you guys won't be able to get there on your own. So if you'll accept my son Jesus, he's going to give you that extra coverage that you need. So Lord, I pray that our hearts would be open this week. Help us to lay our messes, whatever they may be, at your feet. Lord, I pray that you would show up. I pray that you would help. I pray that you would give wisdom and direction to those that are knee-deep in several messes and not exactly sure what to do next. Lord, give us the courage to seek you and to not only lay our lives down at your feet, but to lay our messes down at your feet and just trust that God, you are in control.